Okay. So what's the impact on local governments? To gauge the impact of the funding cuts, it's helpful to understand what portion of local governments' budgets are dependent on state aids and credits. Using information from the 2007 Census of Government Finances published by the Census Bureau, the table on page 16 compares general fund revenues of state government to those of local governments. While state government has a variety of own source revenues, including several taxes you see here, sales tax, income tax, charges and fees. Further on down the line is corporate income taxes. State government relies on intergovernmental aids for about 23% of its source revenues. On the other hand, local government own revenues are limited to most of the property tax charges and fees. The reliance on intergovernmental aid is more than double that of state government, which is approximately 47%. So you have Minnesota here, and then on page 17 you have Minnesota state government, local government compared to state government on a national average and local government compared to a national average. You might ask, okay, but what is underlying some of these local government figures? I've tried to kind of tease some of that out also by the next chart. I didn't have a chance to actually make it into a graph. But what you can do is see how each of the columns represents a local government entity. County, municipal, township, special district, school districts. Now, school districts were held harmless from any of the unallotments. So really the focus of the attention here is on counties, municipalities, and townships. And basically what this reveals, for counties, they and I'm talking about an overall average spread across the state, so each locality will have its own variations, but In general speaking, for counties, the dependence on intergovernmental aid is about 41%. For municipalities, it's on average about 21%. For towns, it's about 17%. And for school districts, 73%. Additional information is also available in a recently released report of the finances of Minnesota cities by the state auditor. And in that report, you can see the range for financing for cities somewhere between 17% for small city or large cities and up to 33% for smaller cities. And I know that, once again, those are averages. Individual cities will vary depending on their needs and how they raise their money.
Michelle, I noticed here the revenue on this page for the counties and the municipals is the same. Is that just an anomaly, or is that a typo?
That's a typo. The muni number, that must have been an older chart. The muni number is in the vicinity of 8.4, 8.5. And I can get you updated information on that too and get it more exact.
Thank you.
It's also helpful to know when, by law, local government payments are made to localities. The table on page 19 identifies payment dates by program, local government aid, county program aid, and the market value credits. As you can see, local government and county program aid payments are done on July 20th and December 26th. Now think a little bit. What does that mean? Everything that was intended to be on allotment for fiscal 10 has already passed us by. Both payments have been unallotted for fiscal 10. While market value credit payments are October 31 and December 26 as well. Remember that local governments operate on a calendar year. the state on a fiscal year, so that last-minute adjustments to a December payment can create significant havoc to an end-of-the-year local government budget. So when the governor unallotted money back in 2008, that December payment, and this is explained more fully in some of the appendix information, but the notice that we had, we received the forecast at the beginning of December, and he unallotted money at the end of December, and then their calendar year budgets closed. And that was a significant event for local governments. And so this time around, they had a little bit more notice to prepare, but I'm just trying to identify that the timing of the payment and the payment dates are actually set in law, and there's not fudge room there unless the law is actually changed by the legislature. Okay, so what do local governments do for unexpected budget shortfalls? In anticipation of potential unallotments, our 2009 tax bill included two provisions through Chapter 88 to help local governments kind of tie over and at least give them some options for funding if they were really put in a stressful pickle situation with little time to react. The first provision included is a local government authorization to issue emergency debt certificates, and basically this allows them to do that without voter approval. We don't have much information on that, although debt certificates, local government selling bonds, especially in the last 18 months, it's picked up, but it was not truly a major option for a number of local governments. The other provision that we included allows a local government to recertify their levy due to a late unallotment, or actually do a special levy for reductions in market value credits. And basically, as it says here, a county or city is allowed to recertify its property tax levy by January 15th if the December aid and credit payment from the state is reduced to unallotment. The Act also allows the special levy to replace the estimated amount of the reduction in the market value credits payable in the year which the levy is payable. And it's supposed to be done in extraordinary times. We do have information from the Department of Revenue on how many local governments actually did that. And basically what DOR has mentioned to me, and remember, it had to be done by January 15th, and so the time span has been pretty quick turnaround to get this information. But according to the Department of Revenue, the special levy provision was used by about 55% by cities to regain about 55% of their unallotted funds, and by counties to regain about 60% of their unallotted funds. And we know that that's kind of a floor, and the reason why we know this is that a number of local governments were not up against their levy cap. So we're tracking special levies here, but there could have been additional levy done through the general levy, and we wouldn't have specific information on that. But it could have been done by there, or there are other options, obviously delaying projects or cutting budgets to actually mitigate their budget problems.
Representative Kalin, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schill, if you have the answer, would be great. If not, if we could get it from revenue, the dollar amount, the total dollar amount statewide that was used, that cities and counties used under the special levy authority.
I can get that. Mr. Chair and Representative
Kalin.
Yeah. I know that information is available, and remember, it will be the amount certified, so actual amounts collected will come at a later time, but we can provide that for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, and that's basically it. I've got the appendices here provided additional, really detailed things that maybe fiscal analysts look at more so than somebody else. But what I have done is provided just the summary that I give to others in the tax committee, how this lays out and how things are calculated. So for the very first one, you see fiscal 10 and the state unallotment. We take a look at the actual revenue base and then how much was actually certified by the pay 2009 LGA, CPA, and market value credit, and work it all the way through with how it's impacting what they actually get in a payment. And so I've done that for 10 and 11, and I have one for the December payment for 2008. The other things in the appendices, the county program aid and the local government aid history, I've not found it anywhere else where it's fitting neatly onto one page, so I think this will be an item that the tax committee will even be interested in. And then the final thing is we have a catalog of budget activities, especially identifying tax aids and credits, and this kind of gives you a brief snapshot of the spending history and change by fiscal year. And that's the end of my presentation.
Any questions of the witness? Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one small question. This LGA history is informative. Do you have history on the market value credit? Since its inception, when it was enabled, and when and how many times it's been taken away?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scalzi, I would. I don't have it in that neat table form as you see in the appendix. It would take a bit more work to get that information, but I can try to do it. I would turn you back to page the one table. Page 13 of the presentation at least gives you a snapshot of when there have been budget reductions or executive reductions, and that would be a start if you needed numbers, but I will work on the other for you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I've got a long list of people that have asked to testify here. Start with Joe Matthews. And for the people here, we've got a long list here, and we've got limited time. We have to start session at 6:30, so if you can keep it short, and if you're next on the list, if you can be ready, we're going to try and go by this list here that I have on the agenda. And we're more worried about service cuts and people, not so much about taxes, because that's dealt with in the tax committee. So if you can limit yourself to that, that's kind of what we're trying to find out, how these cuts have affected the cities and the townships.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association is here, so we'll kind of both tag team the county piece. I just wanted to make this committee aware that in addition to the cuts outlined in this report, we do provide a number of state-mandated services. So counties do take cuts in other areas of the budget, whether it's human services, et cetera. The governor's budget, I think, proposed $387 million or $347 million in reductions in human services, and we expect to have some impact on that as well. So I just want you to be aware that it's not just the aids and credits that impact us. What are we doing? Essentially, in talking with our county administrators, it's a mix of dipping into reserves. We've gone to some of our employees and asked them to reduce the number of hours they work, if that's possible. I'm sure you'll hear from the labor folks about furloughs, and some counties have asked for those and some have not. We've delayed a number of capital projects, and we've tried to reduce expenses to the extent we're able to. I'd also say that more counties are looking at ways that they actually can stop bonding completely and start doing kind of a cash pay-as-you-go system so that more revenues are flexible for future shortfalls. I just want to say that the demand for our services doesn't decline because the state revenues to provide those services decreases. And so as a result, I think everybody's hearing about, you know, to the extent that the mandates allow us to reduce services, I think that's happening. Some counties have reduced funding for programs like 4-H or the county fair. Other counties have looked at whether or not they're able to provide health care to their employees. Some counties have gone from providing an employer-paid system to actually providing a stipend. I only know of two or three counties that have done that, but others are looking at it. And so to the extent that we can manage our growing costs, I think we're doing that. And obviously health care for especially the small counties is really a big cost driver. As far as the unallotment specifically, I think it's just a lot of uncertainty for us that makes it difficult to budget. The legislature leaves in May, and whether or not the funds you appropriate through county program aid or other funds will actually show up is kind of a question that we have as we set our levies in the fall for the following year. And so I think you are seeing more and more counties consider how dependable those resources will be. Do you budget assuming you'll get 100% or 50% or 0% of county program aid? That impacts the decisions we make about how many employee positions we eliminate through attrition or layoffs. Just as a for instance, I know Crow Wing County told us the other day that they have gone from about 450 employees to about 400. And that was prior to anything that happens this session, so I would anticipate that further reductions would mean some further impact for them and every other county. And then finally, I just want to say that we have raised taxes. As far as the property tax, that's kind of our place we go as a last resort. I think that our county commissioners and our county staff would say they've done the best they can to keep that manageable. We've only used about half of the authority available to us under levy limits. If you average out across all the 87 counties, as Ms. Schill's report showed for the unallotment for county program aid specifically, it's about 60%. But I think as we go forward, those special levies will probably be used more heavily. But I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Carlson. Mr. Chair, members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, who share common membership between my organization and AMC. I represent 13 of the larger counties in the state. And I probably am going to depart a little bit off of the desired script here and going to tell you there are some good aspects to the unallotment. From our perspective, first, it provided timely closure to the 2009 budget debate. I'll qualify that sort of, and I'll get into that later. But I don't think the legislature really appreciates the time constraints that particularly a special session, much less adjournment in May, places upon us, in that we have to come up with our preliminary budgets and certify our preliminary levies by September 15th. The closer you get to that time period, the more and more difficult it becomes for us to do that in a rigorous, professional manner. And it's particularly trying for counties because not only do we have to put together our own budgets, but we also have to accommodate changes in the property tax system because we're the administrators of that system on behalf of all local governments, not just ourselves, but the cities and the school districts as well. I'll also say that there was another good point in that the governor funded much of the $2.7 billion by, rather than cutting payments, shifting the school aid payments, which covered about 1.7 of the $2.7 billion problem. However, those same positive aspects did create a couple of downsides. First, in unallotting our 2010 aids, the manner in which they did it really created a great deal of uncertainty for us and also delayed our ability to levy back for those resources. Ms. Schill went through the aspect where an allotment gave you levy authority. What was failed to make clear is the authority that was exercised related to the unallotment for 2009. The unallotment for 2010 was very consciously delayed becoming actual until after January 15th to deny us the ability to levy for those cuts in 2010. Our authority for that is delayed until 2011 under current law, and that denied us a levy authority for $67 million. As Mr. Matthews said, there's no one-for-one relationship, we weren't necessarily going to exercise that authority, but for particularly counties at very close to the margins and being able to finance their budgets, that frustrated their abilities to compensate for the state aid cuts. Also, for some whatever reason, the actual announcement, instead of being delayed until January 16th, was delayed till February 4th. So we're more than a month into our fiscal year, and we still didn't know what those aid cuts were until that time. They also, the reliance on the one-time nature of the education aid shifts, the downside of it is it did nothing to take care of the state's long-term fiscal problems. And we're in a substantial state of uncertainty as to how the state's going to deal with the longer-term budget deficit of $5.4 to $7.5 billion. I think the point that I want to make is that we were probably as guilty as anybody in the past of saying we're doing more with less. Well, I'm here to tell you that we're doing less with less. We are no longer able to provide the level of services that people have grown accustomed to in the past. And it's particularly compounded for counties, as Mr. Matthews said, in that we're being pulled in two different directions. On one hand, the services that we provide in the human services area are going up with the decline in the economy. For example, our health care roles have gone from 463,000 to about 525,000 in the last year, a sizable increase. We're the front end of the process of getting those people qualified for those benefits and to some extent provide the services directly. We don't have the staff to do it as well as we've done in the past. And in addition, a term that you've maybe heard in the past, we have what are called maintenance of effort requirements. State required levels of expenditures in three different human services programs and for libraries. That currently is $414 million annually. And that, instead of going down with our cuts in state aid, has gone up by over $26 million, and that's discounting the $19 million increase that Hennepin County accrued for its takeover of the Minneapolis library system. And I'll also point out it's not germane to the unallotments, but it compounds the financial difficulty. Our levy limits under the law that you adopted back in 2007, effective for 2008, the inflation adjustment was only 0.83%. It simply didn't accommodate making up for the state aid cuts. Finally, I'll just give you a few examples in addition to the general ones that Mr. Matthews gave you. In St. Louis County, the effects of the unallotments have been that they've eliminated county staffing of a nursing home. Over 200 jobs are no longer funded by the county, and they've eliminated an assisted living program. In Rice County, a youth crime prevention program has been eliminated. There's simply no longer the resources to do that. Mr. Matthews mentioned the furlough programs, and I want to make it clear these are unpaid furloughs. They're every bit the same as a wage cut for the affected individuals. It's not just a vacation. It's a wage cut for those individuals. Washington County has eliminated its child support enforcement, even though we earn 67 cents on every dollar we collect from the federal government under that. And again, with that level of staffing, it's no longer there. Finally, I'll just mention some of the general responses are most kind of counties just aren't doing the capital investments they have in the past. They're putting all their resources into the operating budget. Capital investments are being delayed. And finally, layoffs were common, not filling vacancies. Dakota County has well over 200 vacancies that remain unfilled. And 0% wage settlements were real. It's not, you know, a question of cutting back from the increases. Most of my membership has given real zeros in terms of the increases over the next year to two-year period. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for the witnesses. Okay. Thank you. Jennifer O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I want to thank you first off the bat for letting us bring in the variety and number of cities that will talk to you today. The league obviously has, the state of Minnesota has 853 or 857 some cities, and they all look a lot different. So you'll hear from a variety of those today who can talk about the various ways unallotments have affected their cities. Cities have experienced $258 million in state aid and credit program cuts since December of 2008, when the first most recent unallotment occurred. These cuts have resulted in items much like you've heard from the counties today. Lost jobs, dramatic service cuts, and severely depleted reserves. I would add, both Mr. Matthews and Mr. Carlson gave you a lot of detail about the unallotments and described some of the MOE cuts. The only maintenance of effort requirement on cities right now is a library MOE. And I just wanted you to have that for your education today. I'll turn it over to Heidi with the city of Ely, Omerza, correct?
Correct. Good afternoon. I'm Heidi Omerza, council member from the city of Ely. Thank you for the opportunity for me to let you know the importance of local government aid to cities in this state. I'm going to give you a quick snapshot of the city and also let you know the importance of the city of Ely to the state of Minnesota. Ely was born out of a logging camp, became a mining town, and is now known as a tourist destination around the world. Once again, we find ourselves in transition. LGA is 44% of the city of Ely's budget. That's worth repeating. Local government aid is 44% of my budget. As expenses have continued to rise, the city of Ely has continued to be fiscally responsible. In 2008 and 9, our budget was $3.6 million. This year, 2010, our budget is $3.4 million. We have done this by reducing projects, and what projects have moved forward, we've done cooperatively, especially with our county, in the way of roads. We have not reinvested in our local buildings. Most of these buildings are 80 years old, and eliminating positions. In 2005, we had 44 full-time employees. Currently, we have 39 full-time employees. Usage at our city library continues to go up significantly with the same hours, less staffing hours, and materials. We eliminated our canine program. We are hopeful to continue hiring beach attendants and outdoor ice skating rink attendants through high school and college work programs, or we will not have them at all. The city has a brand new $350,000 youth recreation facility that was built with volunteer labor, donations, and grants. It is currently sitting empty because we cannot afford to staff it. Imagine the position the city of Ely was in when we were unallotted in late December 2008, as we were finalizing our 2009 budget. Ely was forced to take out a short-term loan for almost $500,000 to cover payroll, especially, and other expenses. Unfortunately, we're there again. Best estimates before today, that is, we're looking at borrowing again between $350,000 and $450,000. Let me reiterate, that's after that was before the press conference today. Ely continues to operate without the luxury of a reserve. Ely is not a city of through traffic. We are a standalone city of a little over 3,000 people, and we sit at the end of the road. Ely plays host to over 1 million visitors a year. Of those 1 million visitors, approximately 500,000 are Minnesotans. If you're one of those visitors, I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and if you've never been to Ely, I love playing hostess. Over 500,000 Minnesotans take that journey north to recreate in our backyard each and every year. Those are tax-paying Minnesotans whose taxpaying dollars stay within the state. Worth noting. They come to our city, use our parks, our beaches, our library, recycling center, drinking water, community buildings, our streets, and our infrastructure. Ely businesses rely on those visitors for survival, but our tax base alone cannot support it. We simply do not have the tax capacity to support In the absence of any other revenue sources for Ely, the distribution of local government aid is critical, critical to the survival of one of Minnesota's shining gems, the City of Ely. Thank you for your time and your consideration. I look forward to showing all of you around Ely when you visit and make the journey northward. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Jeremy, so Representative Kayla.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Chair. Heidi, I mean, Councilwoman Omerza.
Heidi works.
I had the pleasure of being in the city of Copenhagen in December for United Nations Conference, and as you know, that was where an important decision was made related to the city of Ely a few months earlier, and I did hear that it was the local government aid cuts to Ely that prevented, that had you had a strong presence in Copenhagen, we likely would have had a major international series of events in Ely in 2016, and I just want to tell you that our condolences, we had hoped that Ely would have been the site of the 2016 Summer Olympics, but we hope that we can restore that local government aid to give you a viable shot in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Any further questions? Thank you, Ms.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, my name's Pat Hinches. I'm the city manager of Mankato, Minnesota. I'd like to just start kind of setting the stage. Mankato's a regional center. Basically, 20% of our property, over 20% of our property is tax-exempt. 25% of our population is student university population. We've had reasonable property tax growth over the past few years. It's been a reasonably vital economy in the past 10 years. I would say that, however, it has been very challenging riding the roller coaster of local government aid. Basically, at one point in time, local government aid was well over 55% of our budget. Today, it's downwards to about 27% of our budget. We had a high water mark of $9.7 million in our budget for local government aid in 2002 and 2003. With this potential unallotment, additional unallotment will be down to about $4.6 million of local government aid. Last year we embarked upon a budget reduction effort. We've reduced our spending levels below 2007 for the 2010 budget. It has come with some tough choices. We looked at our services in terms of primary services, core services, police, fire, snow plowing, park maintenance, basic park maintenance. We looked at secondary services, the recreation programs, library spending, and then we certainly had a number of livability initiatives that our community supported, funding for nonprofits and arts and seniors and those types of things. Basically, we eliminated most of our livability initiatives. We've eliminated such secondary services such as recreational programming in our nature center. We've eliminated the school liaison program in the police department. So we are basically down to core service spending. And we've had to make some tough choices in terms of staffing of those levels, particularly in the snow plowing and police and public safety area. Basically, we have 22 reduced or open positions in the city right now. That's about 10% of our workforce. We've had some potential further decisions we have to make should this next unallotment come to us, which is about $1.7 million. Basically, that will we will need to look at about 10 to 15 more positions potentially in our general fund alone, which will ultimately be a workforce reduction in our general fund, our tax-supported funds, of nearly 30% of the workforce. And that's going to come basically, it has to come with reductions to public safety and public works employees in those funds, basically because essentially those two services make up about 60% of our spending in the general fund. What we're going to see potentially as an alternative, for example, $1.7 million means all of our snowplow budget of about $900,000, all of our library budget that we pay to the county of about $700,000, and all of our street lighting budget. So those are the alternatives that you have with this deep of a local government aid cut, and potentially the alternatives that come with that. If we have to make up that in terms of taxes, we would be looking at well over a 20 to 25% property tax increase to the average value home, which comes at certainly the alternative, and I believe the levy limits would prohibit that type of cut. So the cuts potentially have been deep, particularly to greater Minnesota cities and core cities that depend on providing basic services to a population that's, you know, generally in need, whether you have a regional center population, a rural population that is made up primarily of seniors and lower value property, or you have a core city that has a need for a lot of essential services that they have to provide to a lower wealth population. So these local government aid is an important program. It's a primary program that funds beyond property taxes our basic services.
Any questions for the testifier? Thank you, Mr. Hankins. Jeff Kletcher?
Jeff Kletcher, that is correct. Mayor, City of Floodwood, and the Vice President of the Minnesota Association of Small Cities. Floodwood is a small town located between Duluth and Grand Rapids, if you're going northeast or northwest to southeast, or between Hibbing and Moose Lake. We're at the intersection of U.S. Highway 2 and State 73. Our population is about 530. We don't have a library. I don't have a rec center. I don't have youth programs. I don't have a skating rink that has attendance, but we do have a skating rink because our volunteers flood it in the community. I've got no parks. I've got no swimming pool. I'm a community that's located about 40 minutes from the nearest police backup. That means that I have to provide somehow police protection or someone on call 24/7, 365. My city was fortunate enough to be spared on allotment the past 2 years, but that doesn't mean we haven't suffered tremendously from local government aid cuts through the years. In 2001, our city's budget was $655,000. In 2010, that city budget is $519,000. We've made cuts, and we've made cuts, and we are providing a lot less with a lot less. We have fewer employees. I have less than 6 full-time employees. My police department is about 2.5 employees. I have 2 full-time and 1 part-time employee. I have a half-time secretary, so I'm just under 3 full-time equivalents there. I have a city administrator, and she gets a secretary about 4 hours a day. And our office hours at City Hall are from 10 to 2. So we're not open the way we used to be, 8 hours a day. I have 1 maintenance man, and that maintenance man does the plowing. He takes care of our well. He takes care of our water system. He takes care of our sewer system and our sewer ponds. And he gets a little help with some snow plowing and lawn mowing. I have no place left to cut. The cuts have been made. One other effect that we're seeing here is, besides not plowing as much, not mowing as often, eliminating a lot of the services that we might have provided, the small cities across the state, like my own city, we're putting off necessary repairs and we're deferring maintenance, be that on our buildings that need new roofs or need to be painted or maintained inside and out. Our roads aren't being fixed. We're not filling the potholes, doing the crack sealing or replacing that we need to do. We're not fixing our sidewalks, and we're not making the energy updates that would be so nice to make, be it replacing a door or adding insulation or replacing some windows. The equipment's not being replaced. Police equipment, maintenance equipment, water and sewer equipment. And cities across this state are being set up for some major catastrophes as time goes on. as we put off this maintenance. It's only going to get worse as time goes on. That's a brief synopsis of my city. Once again, things are tight. Any cuts that come in the future are people, and it's awful hard when you have less than six staff to cut.
I have one question before I
Yes, sir.
You said you're not doing required maintenance. What happens when these buildings, when you spring a leak, and you're going to get more damage?
You know, you got to dig somehow, and you got to fix the minimum stuff. So we're fortunate. We have landed a USDA grant this year to replace our 1930s-something city hall. But we're adding a huge loan debt on our citizens to do that. But that old building will now be taken over by the fire department. So it won't be used as often, and it won't have to be kept as warm. But you do little by little. But it's still, you're putting it off, just like we all do at our homes when money's tight.
And what is the response from your residents?
You know, it's the mayors and the city council people on the small towns, we hear it first. It's hard for the local residents to come down to St. Paul or get in touch with senators or representatives such as yourself or the governor. And, you know, they understand that the tight situation we're in, and they understand what we have to do, but because they're doing it themselves. Floodwood's a poor community. We have a low tax base. The Poverty Commission road tour that was out there a couple years ago stopped in Floodwood and found out about our poverty issues. So we know that tax increases are very difficult for our residents. They want a solution that's fair and equitable, and maybe a solution that includes some tax increases, too.
Any further questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Elizabeth Glidden, and I'm a council member from the city of Minneapolis. I'm also the chair of our intergovernmental subcommittee, and I'm joined here by Pat Bourne, who is our director of finance for the city of Minneapolis. I have to actually start with a reaction, I think, for this committee to the governor's proposed budget for today because of the large number of that budget and the impact on the city of Minneapolis, which is $50.3 million cut to local government aid for the city of Minneapolis. And I want to hit home how massive that cut is to the city, and that this is a cut that really has the potential to change public service as we know it in the city of Minneapolis. It's a cut on top of a $43 million cut to local government aid that we sustained over the period of 2008 to 2010 through the unallotment and other reductions there. Let me give you some perspective to these numbers. our budget for 2010 for our police department is $133 million. $50 million is more than one-third of our entire police department budget. Our fire department budget for the city of Minneapolis for 2010 is $55 million. So we are talking about almost the entirety of our fire department budget. The public works portion funded by general funds in the city of Minneapolis, I don't have an exact number there, but these are the things like snow plowing. These are all general fund funded elements, and essentially that would be about twice at least the amount of that budget to do those functions. We have a budget in 2010 of $1.2 billion for the city of Minneapolis, but we have very little flexibility in where to take cuts to local government aid. We must take them from what's called our general fund, as it is our only flexible funding. The general fund for the city of Minneapolis is less than one-third of our total budget. It is $375 million. And of that, 60% is what funds our police, our fire, and our public works function. So as you can see, these are direct cuts to the core functions of the city of Minneapolis. As some of my other city colleagues have mentioned, for those of us who have visitors who are regional centers of commerce, we have responsibility not only to our own residents who live in the city of Minneapolis, but to the many thousands of people who work in our city, who visit our city, who visit the parks, who attend school and higher education institutions, and so forth. And we have less capacity to ensure that those people are safe in the city of Minneapolis, that they are driving on safe roads, and all the other things that you expect as good government service. We have done all of the easy cuts, as you've heard the others say, and I'm just going to give you a couple examples of things that have happened in our 2010 budget. One example is that our police department had proposed eliminating, I think, in excess of 50 civilian jobs in an effort to not cut as few actual police officer jobs as possible. And these are critical jobs too. The people who help keep the crime lab working, who help make sure that police officers are doing investigation jobs and staying on the street and all the things that those police officers should be doing, and that's what the civilian employees help them do. And all of that right now has been eliminated in the city of Minneapolis, or a vast majority of those civilian jobs. We have gone in and we have totally redone how we look at CDBG funding for the city of Minneapolis. This, of course, is federal funding that can only be used for certain purposes, and there are caps on how much of that funding can be used for funding employees. And we have shifted all that we could do to make sure that we are funding core city services with those employee-type dollars, like employees in the police department. Another point that I wanted to make for you is the nature of the cuts that come with an allotment, and whatever what others have referred to as the uncertainty, and what that does to our budget process. Using an allotment as a budget balancing tool creates, frankly, havoc on our budget. We have a budget that ends on December 31st, and when an allotment comes, we have nothing to do but to cut, of course. We are done with our revenue-raising options, which is the property tax and the levy. And beginning in December of 2008, which was when allotment was first applied, we have lived under this uncertainty in the city of Minneapolis. I think that we have responded as quickly as possible. We have responded by making permanent-type cuts in our budget process for the city of Minneapolis. But there's no doubt that this uncertainty escalates the difficulty of dealing with these large cuts. And I want to mention the impact of those cuts then on our employees at the city of Minneapolis, because this uncertainty adds to the constant stress of compensating for higher workloads, which have been caused by belt tightening that has increased since 2003, the first time major cuts were made to local government aid. And this has an unavoidable impact on morale. The uncertainty impacts the firefighter on the bubble. I thought there was a good article in the Star Tribune that went through how much training our firefighters have and then what they are going through as they are living with the uncertainty of knowing that they might lose their jobs. Police officers who have recently completed a full year of cadet training and all that investment that goes into that, and all the other employees who support the city enterprise. I'm really proud of our city employees. I know that they love public service as an aspect of their work, and I want them to be able to concentrate on their jobs, not on uncertainty caused by an allotment. So thank you for listening. We know that there are tough decisions that have to be made by the state, and we stand ready to help with those decisions, and we know that those decisions will involve cuts. And we just ask that we can restore the partnership aspect of how we can work together on how those cuts impact cities and city services.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Councilmember Glidden. And I really appreciate your testimony because, members, you know, Minneapolis is not an island. It's the largest city in the state. And, I mean, I think all of our constituents, whether you're District 60B in Minneapolis or throughout the state, are in and out of the city. And so we are one state, and I especially feel that the cuts have been handed down today in Minneapolis are especially difficult. It's a very, very a cynical move, and I believe that we really need to pay attention to the effects on our largest city, and so I appreciate your highlighting that piece of it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you may not know this today, but if you could get it to us, it would be helpful. We always hear about the dollars that the state of Minnesota sends to the federal government versus what we get back from the federal government, and we're at a deficit. And I'm just kind of curious. I've heard other people say they send money to the state and they don't get it back. So I'm kind of wondering if anybody knows or if you could get this, how much the city of Minneapolis sends to the state in income, sales taxes, whatever, and versus what you get back in LGA and other aids.
Sure. And Mr. Bourne might actually know those close to those figures. I think I have a guess, but I'd rather have Mr. Bourne.
Please identify yourself for the tape. And
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Pat Bourne. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the city. It's easy for us to get you an answer on the sales tax return. It's more difficult to give you an answer on the income tax. We've asked that question, too, because we're very interested in knowing the answer to that question that you've asked. Perhaps Councilmember Glidden has a better answer than I do. Maybe it's because I'm burdened by wanting to have some precise number.
Right. Well, I'd heard these numbers before, and Mr. Ranieri from our Intergovernmental Relations Department was just whispering in my ear that the sales tax number is approximately $370 to $380 that is given to the state. The return back, we would have to, I think, articulate a little bit more specifically. Of course, we only have particular taxes that go from our entertainment tax and the lodging tax that go to the convention center and other such things in the city of Minneapolis. Then, of course, there is the property tax aspect, and we will double check these, but the last I understood, we gave a bit more in property taxes to the state than we received back in local government aid, but with these proposed cuts, that would change quite a bit. So so I think it was close, although we were giving a little bit more in property taxes than we were receiving in recent years. But that would, again, that would change quite a bit with these new numbers.
Any more questions for the witnesses? It was interesting that we had small city and largest city, one by after the other, and they're hitting hard both places.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mike McGuire. Please identify for yourself for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike McGuire. I'm the mayor of Eagan, Minnesota, and the board chair of the Municipal Legislative Commission. I want to thank you for your time in having me here today, and I will try to be brief. The Municipal Legislative Commission for members is a coalition of 14 communities. They are suburban Twin Cities communities. We have over 700,000 citizens. We prefer to call them customers. And we have about 500,000 jobs in our 14 communities. Because these communities are not eligible for local government aid, we are often assumed to be somehow able to absorb cuts in state aids and credits, or somehow immune from the fiscal challenges the rest of the state is. I'm here to suggest to you that neither are true. I want to spend just a little bit of time talking about the market value credit and the unallotments of market value credit and the impacts on city services in our 14 MLC communities that the fiscal environment is having that's perpetuated by that. Our 14 communities, my understanding is you should be getting a handout, a stapled together two-page handout, summarizing some of the impacts, both of decreasing revenues and on city services for each of our communities. MLC communities have, between fiscal 08 and 09, lost a combined $13.4 million in market value homestead credits that were not reimbursed after having been taken from the local government levies that our city councils and mayors have levied. The market value credit losses, I think, need to be in the context of a fiscal environment that, if I can quote Jackson Brown, suggests that times are tough all over. We have not only unallotments of market value credit, but we also have decreasing housing prices, as well as valuations that are on appeal. I think if you look at the sheet, I think it's interesting to note that in the city of Bloomington, there is a 132% increase in the number of commercial properties where valuations are under appeal. In Inver Grove Heights, 100% increase in the number of commercial properties where the valuation is under appeal. We also are seeing decreases in revenues from building permits. I'll suggest if you look at Eden Prairie, that's a loss to the tune of $1.2 million over the last 2 years, and in Edina, a loss of $1 million over the last year, as well as decreasing investment revenues from a number of places. For Representative Scalzi, reached it to a tune of $400,000 lost to Shoreview, for example. In MLC communities, the unallotments cannot be taken in isolation from an already challenging and getting an increasingly challenging fiscal environment. Our cities tend to have a fairly focused menu of lean government services, and I would suggest that as we go through unallotments and this challenging financial environment, our cities are as lean as it gets, and we are going to start hitting bones soon if we haven't already. Just some examples of some of the changes that have been made in this fiscal environment in our 14 MLC communities. In Apple Valley, the city cut 4.5 full-time positions, including police sergeant, police officer deputy, fire chief, and street maintenance workers. Bloomington has instituted a hiring freeze or chill, filling only essential positions. The city of Burnsville has reduced annual spending by $3.5 million, including the eliminations of 20 full-time equivalent positions. They have frozen wages as well for non-union employees. Just a couple of more examples, and before I conclude with the city of Eagan and impacts there. Lakeville has had $1.4 million in cuts adopted in the 2009 budget, and they have had staff reductions of roughly 10% in their entire staff contingent. And I'll note that that's a community in the MLC that is continuing to grow in terms of citizens and demands on their services as well. Very challenging cut to make. In my own community in the city of Eagan, we experienced about $1 million in unallotments. In Eagan, this past year, we cut 9.2 full-time equivalent positions. We have frozen wages for our non-union employees, and all of our union contracts are coming up this coming year, and I certainly anticipate that we will have some very challenging negotiations. Our 2010 budget came in lower than our 2009 budget because of these cuts. We have reset the base on a permanent basis. Even still, the City Council in Eagan, in order to maintain investments in infrastructure and some services, had to increase our property tax levy by 6%. We're not used to doing that in Eagan, and I call that out, Mr. Chair, to make it clear that of the 6% increase in our property tax levy, 5 of those 6 points are directly related to our recovery of unallotted homestead market value credit. Across the 14 MLC communities, traditionally perceived as somehow able to absorb it or immune, I think it's clear that we are not. We are getting into a very challenging fiscal position in communities like Egan and the rest of the MLC. Our communities are having to make choices between whether or not they cut people, raise taxes, continue to repair roads, maintain equipment that is going to be more expensive to fix later on if they don't, or, quite frankly, the combination of all of them. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time today, and I appreciate the work that you're doing in the rest of the committee as well.
Any questions? I guess I have a question. Is how are your residents taking these cuts? Are they noticing them, or are they feeling them, or...
You know, I think my residents are taking these cuts in a couple of different ways. One is that we're very proud of our pavement management system in Egan. It is a co-participation between city government and residents. It's been that way for years. Increasingly, when we propose to do maintenance on a road where we have to make an investment to extend its life, we're having neighborhoods come back and ask that we not do it at this time. The fact of the matter is the contract environment is such, and we just can't afford to not do the maintenance. So that's one area. The city administrator in Woodbury, I think, at one point suggested to me that what's interesting about these kinds of cuts is the things that seem the littlest are the ones that citizens notice most. In my community, and in particular because of the snow we had over the Christmas weekend, we've had to change the way we clear and plow our sidewalks. That is one. There is hardly a week that goes by that I don't have at least two or three calls noticing that it's taking longer to clear sidewalks. That means that people with disabilities or who are reliant on transit are having a harder time getting to their job if they have one, or getting out to look for one. Now that's in Egan. We're not exactly the transit center of the region. We're trying to become that, but I think those impacts are true not just in Egan but across the region.
Thank you. Thank you.
Again, thank you for your time.
Dave Osberg.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here before you today. My name is Dave Osberg. I'm the city administrator for the city of Hastings and also serving today as before you as president of Metro Cities. And I think many of you might know that Metro Cities is a organization that represents 80 local governments throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area, not only before you folks at the state legislature on a frequent basis, but also at the Metropolitan Council. What I want to briefly talk about, and much of this has already been addressed today, is just reflecting on the cuts and unallotments that state aides have had on metropolitan cities over the last 7 years or so. Since 2003, our Metro Cities members have lost about 50% of our state aid, or about half, of course, since what they once received in 2003. And I want to talk specifically for a minute about Hastings. I think many of you are aware Hastings is a town of about 23,000 people, about a half hour south of here on the Mississippi-St. Croix River, abutting the state of Wisconsin. And we have had through our state aid loss over the last few years, and the unallotment in particular, like many cities before you today, delayed maintenance that we've had to contend with. We've had our employees in 2009 through a voluntary program. About half of our 110 employees volunteered up to 40 hours of unpaid furlough throughout 2009, saving us about $80,000. We're asking our employees in 2010 to have 0% cost of living adjustments, not unlike what you've heard before. And probably one of the most significant impacts that our council just recently completed is the implementation of a stormwater management fee, not only to assist with some of the mandates that come on stormwater management programs over the last years, not only from the federal and state government as a result of that, but also just to help offset some of the lost state aids over the last 6 or 7 years or so. Cities throughout our organization have also managed in all sorts of ways, similar to what you've heard today. We've had wage freezes, staff have been furloughed, we've had positions that have been unfilled, not unlike what we've had in Hastings, which we've had five positions unfilled over the last several years, including one police officer and one firefighter. And while I want to recognize what the chair said earlier, dealing with this is unallotments and state aids and you're not contending with taxes, I do want you to understand that does have an impact on property taxes. We also have had a significant decrease in building permits. Utility delinquencies and property taxes are significantly the additional delinquencies are also causing problems for many of our metro cities. The other thing that I want to reemphasize that has also been talked about is just the whole scheduling process for unallotments. We as metro cities, as well as all cities throughout the state, can do a pretty good job of budgeting, but when they come at last minutes, like the unallotments have done over the last year or so, that has significant impacts on our planning purposes and causes us to make last-minute decisions that we have to contend with. Finally, let me conclude. We certainly recognize that the state is dealing with a significant budget challenge. We at Metro Cities, our members and our staff, are willing to be a part of the solution. We would encourage you to address the solutions in a long-term and in a viable manner so that the structural foundation is there not only today but in the long term, as our public infrastructure, as you can imagine, is the bedrock of our communities. Quality of life and business growth depends on it. We stand ready to assist you, and we thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. Thank you.
Any questions of the witness? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I have one that's not on the list here. Kent Sulem from the townships.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Solem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. Thank you for letting me get added to the agenda on behalf of township government and the cuts that we have seen. I'll try not to repeat what's been said, but I do just want to highlight that I think it's kind of interesting listening to the list of service cuts and position cuts that the cities and counties are encountering now. They're very similar to the ones you would have heard from us 10 years ago when our LGA was eliminated completely. The loss of services at that point. I think what I really wanted to highlight today are some of the trickle-down effects that we're seeing, because our cuts certainly were smaller in terms of dollar amounts than some of the other entities, but definitely have had an impact on those communities. But even communities that saw no cuts directly are seeing the impacts of the trickle-down. For example, if the county sheriff is having to lay off deputies or spreading their work more, it's harder to get the service calls for nuisance. They'll still do the high crime, but property nuisances and things, you can't get the response that there used to be. Fire service contracts continue to double, triple, quadruple in costs, largely as an offset to the loss of aid, as the cost of providing those services don't necessarily go down, but the aid is disappearing. Those service contracts are doubling, tripling, quadrupling, making it very difficult to afford, and some communities are actually negotiating at their annual meetings, do you want us to provide these services at all? Should we just say we're eliminating fire contracts and we'll go without fire service protection in this region, which actually causes problems for homeowners insurance because it's hard to get a homeowner's policy if you have no fire coverage. We're seeing more and more counties having to revert roads down to the township level because they don't have the funds to maintain the lesser volume roads, and so they're reverting them down to the townships, meaning our maintenance costs are now going up. A combination of these things tend to put a strain on the relation between local governments as you get into battles, particularly like on fire contracts. If you're trying to negotiate with another community for a cheaper contract, the city that's losing the contract steps in because they realize that it's going to be a bigger budget impact for them if they're now getting zero instead of what they thought they were getting. And so you get communities pitting against each other, which hopefully most of the time we can find ways to encourage them to overcome, but it creates ill will that doesn't need to be there, at least in the short term. And so like I said, I just wanted to just very quickly highlight those things that we're seeing a lot of just the trickle down at our level as well as direct impact. And it's something that can be easily missed. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Sarah Leverance. Please identify yourself for the tape.
I'm sorry, what?
Please identify yourself for the tape.
I'm impressed you pronounced it right. It's a very rare occurrence in my life. I'm Sarah Leverins. I'm the legislative coordinator with AFSCME Council 65. We represent local government and nonprofit employees in greater Minnesota. I have with me Tom Lopez, who is an assistant county attorney in Mille Lacs County and president of our local there. also John Thorson, who is with AFSCME Council 5. Mr. Lopez and I are going to approach the local government aid cuts, the different kinds of those, in two ways. He's going to talk about loss of service. I'm going to talk about the effect on our members. And so I'm going to turn to Mr. Lopez first.
And please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Lopez. I'm an assistant county attorney in Mille Lacs County. And I'm here to provide, I guess, more of a man-on-the-street type of perspective as to what LGA has done, the cuts that LGA have done to the counties. Since the unallotment has occurred, the reductions have forced position shrinkage within the county, compressing the jobs that individuals within the county are doing, as other people have testified to today. Now, 2 to 3 employees are doing the work of 2 to 3 times as many. And specifically what I'm here to testify about is how it's affected our zoning and land services department. In my position, I do prosecution of violators of those types of laws, any type of rubbish, Wetland Conservation Act, things like that. We have in the county more of a reactive type of enforcement of those types of laws as opposed to a proactive type of enforcement. And largely because of the fact that we don't have the staff, even before cuts, to go out and proactively search out violators of the law with regard to those areas of the law. So what's created is a complaint system, which essentially pits one neighbor against another, and they're responsible for enforcing or identifying the lack of enforcement of the law. As a result, the individuals in the Land Services Department can't do their jobs effectively, and they can only enforce so much in our county. Mille Lacs County is largely a swamp, I guess, for want of a better description. There's a great deal of wetland. There's a great deal of waterways, and obviously Mille Lacs Lake is at the northern end of the county. One of the most important functions of the Land Services Department is to enforce septic. And I know in the cities, septic systems aren't as in vogue as they are in the country, but certainly in Mille Lacs County, if you have a house, you likely have a septic system. And if we can enforce effectively the septic systems and the failing septic systems within the county, it really affects everybody in the state. Mille Lacs County is just one county, but out of the 80-some counties, there are several septic systems that are likely going unenforced. This causes a huge issue. Unenforced and failing septic systems gets into the waterways, and it affects the life safety, the life health and safety and welfare of all the citizens within the state. We have compounding pressure by state-level agencies like the DNR doing flyovers of our county, looking for violators of the Wetland Conservation Act and other DNR-level rules and regulations. They have a great deal of resources. They can do these types of flyovers. At the end of the day, that they tell us that we have to enforce any violations. It compounds the problem when we have lessened numbers in staff to attempt to enforce not only our rules and regulations within the zoning department, land services department in Mille Lacs County, but in addition to try to effectively department land services department in Mille Lacs County. But in addition to try to effectively prosecute Wetland Conservation Act and other state-level violations, it compounds the pressure on our office and on the Land Services Office. That's my brief testimony as to the types of impact that I guess we all feel when there's a reduction in services at the county level.
Mr. Chair, representatives, I'm speaking because the president of our Rochester local can't be here due to the date change. Our union in Rochester was confronted with the choice. They were given the choice by the city, essentially, in negotiations of layoffs of their less senior members or taking furloughs, where everyone takes, as one of the prior witnesses testified, unpaid time off. In this case, our Rochester unit agreed to take 12 unpaid days a year. It doesn't sound like much, one day a month, but let me tell you about one of our Rochester members that our president was going to talk about. This Rochester member's husband was already on layoff when the union local agreed to do the furloughs. So she was the sole support of their family. As you can imagine, that meant family finances were very tight before the union agreed to the furloughs. After the agreement to do the furloughs, this family made the very difficult decision not to do Christmas this past year. They have children. I believe it's three children. I could be wrong on that. But they have children. So that meant no Christmas for their children. They simply couldn't afford to purchase Christmas presents even for the children. Our Rochester local president is a quilter, so she made each of the three children quilts. But that's not the same as a family Christmas. My union represents Greater Minnesota local government. Last year, we organized approximately 300 new members. We've got a very aggressive organizing department of two people who organized 300 new members. That, according to my boss, kept us even with the number of members that we lost last year due to layoffs or not filling positions. And that's all in our Greater Minnesota locals. So those of you from Greater Minnesota or who've been to Greater Minnesota can imagine the impact that the loss of 300 jobs or those 12 furlough days in Rochester or other communities, because it's not the only place we agreed to furloughs. You can imagine that impact on the local grocery store, the local hardware store, the auto maintenance station, those kinds of things. That's 300 jobs in 2009. And if that's one-third of the cuts, with two-thirds of the cuts still to come, we can figure out what that's going to mean in those communities and what that's going to do. If one of the things that this legislature is talking about, and we've seen the bonding bill the last couple of days, or we're doing the bonding bill here shortly, and that's an attempt to create jobs. If we're going to eliminate in 2 years almost 1,000 jobs in local government in Minnesota, just the local government units we represent, and local government that Mr. Thorson represents or that other people represent, that's going to have a significant impact. You're going to be trying to backfill the jobs that are eliminated by the cuts. And I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Thorson.
Sure. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Thorson. I'm with AFSCME Council 5, and we represent local government employees in the Twin Cities metro area, Duluth and the Arrowhead. And I think I may have missed my opportunity for the camera AV portion of this, but I've got two graphs, and I'll explain them and pass them if I can. Let me start by saying any further cuts to local government means job loss. Consolidations, reorganizations, all of this is additional job loss. And we're dealing with what is a lean sector of our economy to begin with. The first graph looks at state and local government annualized public payroll. As a percent of personal income, both in the U.S. and the state of Minnesota. And as you can see, Minnesota is below the U.S. average and has been since we've been dealing with the cuts to local government aid since 2003. The second graph shows state and local government public employment, full-time equivalents per capita. Again, the U.S. average and the state of Minnesota. And where Minnesota ranks among the 50 states, we're actually right between Kentucky and Arkansas in terms of how many local, both state and local government employees there are per capita. So it's, we're not dealing with a sector of the economy or a unit of government that has a lot of fat to it. The cuts that have been made this last budget cycle aren't just positions. It's not a spreadsheet game. It's people. Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis, their cuts ended up being 100 bodies with jobs. Hennepin County Medical Center, 200 positions, many of which were individuals in doing that work. Hennepin County was forced to lay off and eliminate 6 probation officer positions this cycle. Again, not positions, people with caseloads of 50 to 70 clients. St. Louis County is no longer in the nursing home business with the privatization of the Chris Jensen home. Dakota County has 200 unfilled positions at a time in human services, at a time when the rest of the economy brings more work to human services in Dakota County. They're dealing with the residents of Dakota County who have lost their jobs, needing more services, and at the same time they're having less resources to do that. And I just want to mention, as folks leave the job market, what that looks like right now in Minnesota, there's about 230,000 individuals out of work right now. There's about 8 people for every job available. And that's a statewide number. And a number of regions in the state, it's as high as 15, 20 folks available for each position available. In a recent review of what positions are available, 41% of all of them are part-time. Less than half of them, just 49%, are openings that offer health care, and only 1 in 4 of those positions pay more than $8 an hour. I'm sorry, 1 in 4 pay less than $8 an hour. So the job creation being the path for getting out of our economic situation right now, I think efforts to cut further losses of jobs in local governments is part of that effort. So, thank you.
Any questions of the testifiers? Thank you for coming down. And anybody else that would like to testify before we close the committee? Thank you all for coming today. And with that, we have enough here. We got the minutes from our last meeting. Representative Stern, would you move the minutes?
Sure. I'll move the minutes to be approved as presented.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion's passed, and the meeting's adjourned.